Have you ever said to yourself, I won't forget this lesson. Next time I'll know. But then a funny thing happens. Life intervenes and you forget. Next time comes and you find yourself reacting according to the old habitual pattern. We learn ever so slowly. Or at least that's how it often seems. Maybe this is just a reflection of our internal expectation that we learn quickly. Maybe there's a lesson in just that. Tonight, you will be experiencing the sound of nasal twang. I mentioned to someone earlier that this voice actually tempts me to break out into some old country and western song, Where My Baby Done Me Wrong. The sound so fits that scene and that genre. But no, it will likely be just a Dharma talk with a nasal twang. For you, it may or may not be a distraction. For me, the sound and the experience of producing it are actually reminders of the past 2 weeks' lessons, which, of course, this time, I will surely remember. In the Buddhist tradition, we are taught that every event, every situation, every moment of life can be an occasion for increasing the illusion or awakening out of it, or waking up. I have been hosting a cold, the most intense in recent memory, and it is a few of the lessons from that illness that I want to explore with you tonight. Since we share the same animal body, subject to the same laws of the natural world, this will likely be familiar territory for most of you. So often it seems that if illness is going to show up, it will likely do that after some great expenditure of energy or once an important series of events is over. During the big upheaval at work, during finals, while the family is visiting, we often hum along without a hitch. And then, a couple of weeks later, and back into ordinary time, the organism says, okay, my turn, and we fall apart. I have come to view this as normal or even natural, nothing that needs fixing. It does, however, call us to be extra kind to the body during periods of stress and immediately afterwards. This sequence of events also reflects our tendency to see some situations as more important than others. When we believe this, we pay more attention and give more energy to those situations we judge as important. Tai Chi teaches that the head should always stay over the shoulders and the shoulders over the hips. When instead we lean forward, leading with the head, as is our inclination in this culture, we throw the body off balance and place it at risk for falls or other harm. Judging one moment as having more importance than another is similar to this leaning forward into life, consequently putting ourselves off balance and at risk of harm. Joseph Goldstein calls it toppling forward into the next moment. In contrast, the Vipassana practice teaches staying completely present with this moment, this person, without judging importance or value, simply being with. Such a stance also necessarily involves suspending what I think I know, which may be the most challenging aspect and a reason we so rarely choose it. But how simple! How restful! What a relief, really. So first we look at the setup for illness into which we so often fall, and find that one lesson can be the desirability of cultivating a balanced presence. One more rationale for paying particular attention to daily practice during hard times. I don't know the author, but this is called mutual protection. Protecting oneself, one protects others. Protecting others, one protects oneself. And how does one, in protecting oneself, protect others? By the repeated and frequent practice of mindfulness. And how does one, in protecting others, protect oneself? By patience and forbearance, by a nonviolent and harmless life, by loving kindness and compassion. Well, this particular illness began with a typical sore throat, not severe, but unmistakable one morning upon awakening. I tried swallowing several times, hoping to find that the sensation was just left over from some dream, but no, there it was. The mind's immediate reaction was one of fear and denial. No, no, this can't be happening. It isn't fair. An old Shambhala friend of mine once called such a reaction trying to circumvent the First Noble Truth. What is there about old age, sickness, and death that seems so difficult to imagine might naturally apply to us? We expect stories of others getting colds or the flu, but it's always a bit of a shock when it's happening to me. Stephen Levine tells the story of a woman, 95 years old, as her physician stood at the bedside and gave her the diagnosis of terminal cancer. Her response? Why me? Why me indeed? Well, the mind wasted no time. It began projecting visions of nagging discomfort and inconvenience. As soon as the sore throat was an established fact, the mind launched into overdrive with strategies for the battle. Get thee to Walgreens with a shopping list that includes tissues, chapstick, vaporizer, cough syrup, Zicam, and vitamin C. Then, to cover the Eastern approach, onward to nature's magic for a box of yin chow, the evil-tasting herb known for aborting colds. Now, there is nothing wrong with this response. In fact, from the point of view of survival and self-love, such mobilization is quite useful. But it is instructive for us in terms of our fear, resistance, and the incessant belief that all phenomena are amenable to our fix, our control. So the mind figured that if a little activity is good, more is better. I took out the garbage and recycling, paid all the bills, stocked up on chicken soup and other groceries, watered the plants, and yes, went for what intuition correctly told me would be one last swim before the boom would be lowered and the bed would become irresistible, the only place to be. If it was to be a week of isolation, At least the cupboard would be well stocked and everything would be up to date. Looking back, it seems as if I was getting ready for some cataclysmic event. The consummate compulsive planner and preparer, I amused myself with a vision of lying on my deathbed, asking whether the plants needed watering or the phone needed charging. And once again, there is a very functional aspect to all the planning and preparing. It did save time and energy later to get ready for the illness. But it bears paying attention to what is driving such activity. Here's a guess. Illness equals vulnerability equals fear. Gangaji says fear only exists in connection with a story. In this case, the story of my impending death from the common cold. Vulnerability. It's a scary word, isn't it? Of course, we do have some influence, both in staying well and in treating illness. It's a good thing to care for the body. And lest we forget the statistics, a cold is almost certain to be time-limited rather than terminal. The body would almost certainly win this battle. But the reminder unmistakably present is that finally, the struggle for continuing life in this form will be to no avail. One day, some other illness or condition will arrive and will bring the death of the body. We know this at some level, don't we? Even when we don't want to acknowledge or let it completely into the light of awareness, somewhere in the dark recesses of mind, of heart, of the whole organism, we know that death will surprise us. Me? Already? I was just getting started. There must be some mistake. But there is no mistake. Flashback. I had a wonderful time in October at a Halloween party dressed as the Grim Reaper. Completely covered with a black hooded robe, ghastly mask, and holding a scythe, lurking in the shadows, I indulged the fun of seeing on friends' faces reflections of what would be my own shock and alarm. Then their quick relief in realizing, oh, it's only an apparition, a joke. In the background, if we are attentive, comes the shiver of recognition that we laugh because one day it will not be a joke. Impermanence. The demons of fear have parties at night. We awaken in the middle of the night when all is quiet on the outside and notice that the mind is having a field day. Suppose I were to suddenly develop pneumonia and die. After all, I'm older now and colds are riskier. In his marvelous book, A Year to Live, How to Live Each Day as If It Were Your Last, Stephen Levine suggests the game, Dead for a Day. It involves taking a day off from any duties and simply walking invisibly about the streets, your usual haunts, imagining you are no longer part of the scene. What would the scene at your work or your home look like without you in it? Humility has to do with being brought down to earth whence we came. It involves a crack in the deeply conditioned understanding of me as an entity of some import. Humility naturally arises with the realization that the world was all here long before me and will be here in some form long after I am gone. This is from Denise Levertov. As swimmers dare to lie face to the sky, and water bears them, as hawks rest upon the air, and air sustains them, so would I learn to attain free fall and float into Creator Spirit's deep embrace, knowing no effort earns that all-surrounding grace. It can be immensely helpful to remember that Dharma is so much deeper and older than my understanding of it. The Beloved finally doesn't need me in this physical form. I'm just here now like this to work out my own karma and support you in working out yours. And when that's finished for now, there is no other reason for the body to hang around. Patience. The word conjures up visions of traffic tie-ups or spending what seems like hours on hold. Or maybe I'm thinking of impatience. But a truer picture of patience comes from the word abiding. This is the willingness to simply wait without hope of any specific outcome. Isn't that the essence of the meditation practice? We simply sit still, regardless, not waiting for anything in particular. Just to be present is enough. During the hours of discomfort and boredom over the past weeks, I flashed back to other colds during childhood. When childhood nights were long and I couldn't sleep for coughing, Daddy, otherwise a pretty rigid and demanding guy, would sit in the big upholstered chair in the living room and hold me in his lap. Just the delicious remembrance of his tenderness at those times was somehow deeply comforting. The memory also triggered a realization that even now, I could still choose the rich peace of release by simply surrendering to the reality of this moment, drippy nose and all. Simply letting go allows suffering, in whatever form, to show its real face, that of grace. Those of you who were here for Ram Dass's movie, Fierce Grace, will recall that his entire recovery period was suffused with this coin flipping of grace to suffering, suffering to grace. From Mary Oliver, The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? And to close, this is from Stephanie Noble. It's called In Celebration of Winter Solstice. Do not be afraid of the darkness. Dark is the rich, fertile earth that cradles the seed, nourishing growth. Dark is the soft night that cradles us to rest. Only in darkness can stars shine across the vastness of space. Only in darkness is the moon's dance so clear. There is mystery woven in the dark, quiet hours. There is magic in the darkness. Do not be afraid. We are born of this magic. It fills our dreams that root, unravel, and reweave themselves into the shelter of the deep, dark night. The dark has its own hue, its own resonance, its own breath. It fills our soul, not with despair, but with promise. Dark is the gestation of our deep and knowing self. Dark is the cave where we rest and renew our soul. We are born of the darkness, and each night we return to the deep, moist womb of our beginnings. Do not be afraid of the darkness, for in the depth of that very darkness comes a first glimpse of our own light, the pure inner light of love and knowing. As it glows and grows, the darkness recedes. As we shed our light, we shed our fear and revel in the wonder of all that is revealed. So do not rush the coming of the sun. Do not crave the lengthening of the day. Celebrate the darkness, here and now, a time of richness, a time of joy.